The following is presented to you in Around Sound.
It was recorded with whatever was lying around.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a womanish. She won't speak unless it's something worth saying, don't play. The girl take herself so serious, like, people stare curious, like, she got a natural way, her hips sway furious, like, yeah, the luxurious, like, carries herself like the cutest, most prettiest thing you've seen this side of the bay.
Hey! This is Lady Don't Take No, your weekly roundup of all of the real and none of the fake. I'm your host, Alicia Garza. This show is pro-Black, pro-queer, proudly feminist, and pro-do-what-you-like. Every week, you're going to get the best of what goes on in my head, what we loving on, and what we hating on, what we might be, and what we ain't going to do. Politics, pop culture, what America is going to do about all these damn vigilantes, we cover it all. This podcast is based in Oakland, California, the center of the known universe, where we are dealing with Rona and Reconstruction. It's a challenging time, a changing time, a time of transformation. Shoo, it's all the things all the time nowadays, but we're going to help you understand the dynamics of this time every single week. So be sure to tune in, tell a friend, and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. We do it for the culture, so the pod is free 99, because we know that with a country in chaos, the least we could do is keep you from putting your money anywhere else than where it's needed.
She don't like violence, but she can do them things, so don't let your guard down. The thighs are sore, but her eyes are hard. You can't just try, tell her, come on now.
Our guest this week is a transgender advocate and award-winning political strategist based in San Francisco. She is a founder and the executive director of the Compton's Transgender Cultural District, the world's first. And I said, yes, goddammit, I said the world's first transgender district, celebrating the resilience, culture, and presence of transgender people in San Francisco's Tenderloin neighborhood. She is also the founder of Queen Culture Initiative, a social and cultural empowerment project for Black transgender women. I am so excited to have her on the pod today. So please, welcome, 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 Aria Saeed. Aria, hey!
Hey!
Hey, hey! How you doing? Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Trust me, we've been trying to get you on for a minute. And let me just jump in because we are like in the weirdest times ever. We're definitely in the apocalypse, but I'm old enough to remember, right, when this whole pandemic nonsense first started and everything was like, you know, there was no toilet paper on the shelves. This is when we first started understanding supply chains and all this, right?
Oh, God.
And we have been forced to do a lot of adjusting. So let me ask you, what has your quarantine, not quarantine life been like over the last year and some change now?
Oh, you know, quarantine. Sometimes, I know this is going to sound really weird, but sometimes I do miss those days. As the world picks back up, I am a homebody. I'm a loner. I am someone who can be in the house for a whole week without human contact. Mm-hmm. And like phone on airplane mode. Like that is me. When I'm not working, I love being at home. The pandemic obviously tested that because everybody went stir crazy. And I think it's just because, you know, we didn't have the option to do anything else but be at home. But quarantine gave me just so many epiphanies about me, my life, where my life was going, where I wanted it to go. And it taught me to appreciate like just being at home and being okay with it. I used to feel so guilty before the pandemic when my friends would be like, you never come out. And I'm like, I'm that friend that like never comes out, but I still want to be invited.
Mm-hmm. So, me too. Now,
I just like the option. And every blue moon, I'll come out and my friends will gag. But no, just my home is like my sanctuary. And it always has been. And so the quarantine just affirmed that for me and so many other like epiphanies that I had about myself and just like who I was and like being in love with being myself, especially being by myself, especially as a single woman who lives alone in her 30s. Mm-hmm. I think there is a way that my friends who were experiencing that were adjusting to something like learning how to zip your dress by yourself. Like, I'm like, oh girl, I got tips and tricks. I'm a single woman. I live alone. You know what I mean? Like, there's just certain things that you just learn and love about yourself in that experience. And so, yeah, quarantine, she taught me to just really like embrace that.
Mm, I love that. Mm-hmm. Well, look, I mean, during this quarantine, people were also learning a lot of new skills, let's say. So I saw people, you know, doing sourdough starters and, you know, planting gardens and painting and knitting and all this stuff, right? Are there any new skills that Miss Rona has given you? I got to ask, because as we enter into the apocalypse, and I'm quite sure now we are already there, I got to know what you bring into the table.
Child, you know, my friends tease me about this, actually. I cannot cook. I can't drive because I've been working like nonstop since I was a teenager. There's like just things that I am not good at. And during the pandemic, those things are really tested because I can't cook. And I never learned how to cook. I thought the pandemic would try to like force me. But thank God for, I don't want to say an app's name, but thank God for these apps. because I would not be thriving. I live on an app. But I can make salads and sandwiches.
Okay.
And so I learned how to do that in the pandemic.
What is your favorite salad and sandwich combination?
Okay. I love a Waldorf salad. Right.
Yes.
Like if you just want to feel elevated, you know, just pull out your like TV tray little thing. You know, pull it up to the couch. Have a Waldorf salad with a glass of Chardonnay. You know, that's a vibe. And then,
that is a vibe.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are, I'm really good at making those.
I love it. Toasted or not toasted?
Oh, toasted. Always toasted.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah.
I need a little crunch.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's a texture thing. It's a texture thing. And then are we doing creamy peanut butter or chunky?
I prefer chunky. When it has like the little nuts in it and stuff.
Yep.
I prefer that one. I feel like the creamy is for like a toddler. And so this takes the PB&J from like, you know, child experience to like full grown adult, full grown woman. You got to have you got to also have the bougie jams.
Yes. What jam are we using?
You know, I went to Sausalito and I bought a bunch of jams. And so I've been trying different things like orange marmalade, you know, pomegranate, raspberry, you know, very that. Uh-huh. I don't know how to. So, you know, everyone else learned how to bake bread and stuff like that. I didn't learn. I had to work most of the pandemic. But, you know, yeah, mixing jams, too. That's a thing. Ooh. If you want to feel extra, you can always slice some bananas. And put them on. And yeah, that's what I learned at home.
I'm with this. Okay. Well, if you ever want the easy meal tips, come talk to Auntie because my kitchen be cranking every day of the week.
I talked to you about this before because I need to come over for dinner.
Yes, anytime.
But my friends tease me like, you know, the holidays are coming up and I'm like, child, I think I'm going to get in this kitchen and cook. And my friends are like, oh, no, girl, you ain't gonna fix nothing. You know, you good for a sangria. You good for picking candles and a playlist. Curating an outfit for the moment. You know, stick to the blessings that you have. I'm like, y'all tried it. One day I'm finna get in the kitchen. One day.
Okay, but don't let it be the holiday day. You know, don't be experimenting. Because I was also feeling your other post, which was like, if I see a mac and cheese with some damn American cheese slices on it, we don't have a problem, and I'm walking out. I was like, so absolutely.
Wait, hold on. There's three rules. So I got nerved to not be able to boil water, but I am a picky eater. And so I just want to challenge at Sigma. A lot of dudes will come up to me and ask for my number, and they're like, oh, I know you can cook. And I'm like, oh yeah, baby. And then they come over and they're like, so would you fix the cook? I'm like, oh girl, we go get on the app and order something, right?
That's right. You know, that's right. What you feel like
or somebody, you know. But there's three cardinal sins for me, and that is putting marshmallows on a sweet potato candied yam. No, that's using velvet.
It's not necessary.
Look,
especially those little tiny marshmallows. If you finna do a marshmallow, you need to know when and how it's appropriately crusted to belong on a sweet potato.
See, there's some things that, as for me in my house, we do not do. We do not put sugar in grits. That is not what we do. It's always savory.
No sugar in grits. No sugar. I believe that.
And then marshmallows are for s'mores. We're not putting them on the candied yams.
That's fair.
You know, no stovetop dressing. Like, don't brag to me about how you threw some raisins and cranberries in there.
First of all, raisins don't belong in shit, except for cookies and maybe some raisin bran. That's it. Leave them damn raisins alone.
You know how many people invite me over to their food functions? And these days in my life, I just have to decline because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
There you go.
I will have the Uber outside.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm
saying. And head out. Velveeta mac and cheese. What? Why? Why are you serving me a box mac and cheese if it's not baked? I also don't like my mac and cheese to be, you know, those Instagram videos where people make it all like runny and they stir it. If you can stir the mac and cheese, it's not a baked mac and cheese to me. I'm sorry.
What is they talking about? No, see, this is upsetting. First of all, I could do without dressing, period. I don't want stuffing.
It's true.
I don't want dressing. I don't care if it's wet, dry, whatever. We don't need it. We don't need it. It's a filler. We don't need the filler. But Lord Jesus, if you can't make mac and cheese, leave it alone.
Right. Don't have it. There are other dishes y'all can do. Y'all can have a gluten-free, like, green bean or something. You know,
there's
other alternatives. There's other starches. You know, a mashed potato is always... I know how to make an instant mashed potato. I forgot to add that to the list. In addition to salads and sandwiches, I can make an instant mashed potato,
That's fair. Okay, we know where to start then. We know where to start with the basics. It's almost winter, and so all the damn good shows are back. We've been on hiatus all summer, and now they're trickling back in, right? They're trickling back in. Plus, Netflix is a thing, and it be cranking, and except, I love the fuck Netflix. Anyways, are you watching TV right now? And what are you watching on TV right now? What can you not live without?
Okay, so, I mean, TV was good during the pandemic. I will say that. That's when people really was coming through, and you could tell production and the actors and the crews, you know, they had a hunger in their spirit to get those ratings because they knew everybody was at home. And so Bridgerton, The Crown, that was my shit during the pandemic. Now, the show that I am obsessed with right now that I don't see a lot of people talking about is Our Kind of People. It's on Hulu. Now, the first episode does give you like Tyler Perry vibes, which is great. It's great. But then the acting and the wardrobe evolves. Like, you could tell they didn't have much of a budget for the pilot. But Morris Chestnut is in it. Yaya DaCosta from Top Model. And then there's like these like guest appearances from these like amazing Black actors. But basically, it takes place where the Black elite go to summer, and it's like this fictional place. And so it's like all Black billionaires and stuff. But the drama, the storylines, so good.
Oh, I'm into it.
Yes, it's on Hulu.
All right. Well, I'm going to need to pull up then, because that sounds like my kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still over here fucking around with the Real Housewives franchise, and it's still doing it for me.
Which one? Which is your favorite?
Well, my favorite is Atlanta, although now they've had this big shakeup. And so we don't know what we're going to get next season, child. We know we're going to have Candy. We love Candy. We know Cynthia Gome. Mm-hmm. We liked Cynthia.
I loved Cynthia, especially because she balanced out the drama with like her like very quiet. Like people were reading her about that, but I actually appreciated that in contrast to, you know, NeNe and Sheree and,
mm-hmm. and all Kim.
Right. And then these new girls, Portia has left.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she has. Because she married
that
man.
Now she's going to have her own show.
Right. Do you watch the other ones? I struggle with the other ones.
I'm trying. So I also, my second favorite is Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I just live for these bitches every single day because they're true to form. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you know what you're going to get and you believe it. It's believable. This last season, you know, they were dabbling around race. And I was like, oh, this discomfort is real shit. Mm-hmm. Ain't nobody trying to do more than what they're supposed to do. They really don't want to deal with the shit in the first place. But they got Garcelle on here.
Garcelle, right. And Rena's not having it.
They do all their white lady. Correct. But they still do all their white lady microaggressions and talk about how... you know, disagreeable and ornery she is. I'm like, come on, Dory. Now, you know, you're giving me real white lady right now, but it's authentic. And mm-hmm. now I'm trying to get into Salt Lake City. And
because I tried to get into the Austin. Is it Austin or Dallas?
Uh-huh, there's an Austin one. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I tried. And in Potomac, I'm trying, but the storylines are hard to follow. It's like, one of the ladies. So sometimes I struggle with the Real Housewives because I like to watch them as background noise. And then I can look up from doing the dishes and like get the fashion. And so that's where Real Housewives of Atlanta for me is like, you know, they like Beverly Hills. It's surprising. They like wear like their Lululemon leggings most of the show. And then they show up at the reunion show with a gown. Whereas the Atlanta girls, they come in full couture. You know, Marlo's my favorite from Real Housewives. I heard she got her peach.
She finally got her peach, honey.
Mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. That's just a sign for people listening that it's never too late. You can always get your peach. Whatever that is for you in your life, you can always get your peach. It's never too late.
The shade, honey. How did you get into politics? I mean, yes, part of your bio is very much about being a founder and the ED of the transgender district in San Francisco. But also there's a piece of your bio that's about you being a political strategist, and the shit is real talk. And actually on our last episode where we got to speak with Mayor Breed, I was thinking a lot about you, especially when she was talking about some of the initiatives that she is so proud to support in San Francisco right now. So how did you get into politics? Can you give me the background?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I sometimes pinch myself because I'm living a life that was not in my plan. And so for those who may not know, you know, when I was an aspiring fashion designer, I went to school for fashion. And that was like my thing. I knew that worst case scenario, I was going to work in like luxury retail. And that's what I wanted to do. And advocacy overall, like trans advocacy and just advocacy in general, really, it fell in my lap. And so, yeah, like I was homeless in San Francisco in the Tenderloin. I was 18, 19, and I just needed a job. And so my first job was actually just like working at a needle exchange in the Tenderloin part-time. And so fast forward, I had did, you know, many years in sex work, and it was at St. James Infirmary, which is a sex worker advocacy project. It's also a free clinic in San Francisco. And I was deputy director there, and the staff at TGI Justice Project, Miss Janetta and her team, Woods, Joss, they all were like, oh, we should do this like Women's Policy Institute. And they teach you how to do policy. Like, we totally should do this. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm not that smart. I don't have a degree. You know, I don't have any, I dropped out of school. So I'm just like, I'm just a hoe. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to do all that stuff. Because a lot of the staff at TJJP, they secretly have like PhDs and stuff. And they're like renowned thought leaders on prison abolition. But you just would never know. Like, they're wearing Chucks and some jeans and a t-shirt. You just wouldn't know. They don't give you that's that right. like, hello, you know, excuse right. a professor, you know, they don't give that vibe. And so I'm like, y'all can do policy, but I don't think I can do it. And they're like, you can do it. We need to do it as a team. Like, how radical would that be? And so they all applied and I didn't. And so the day of, they're like, oh, Aria, we're applying as a team. We need the copy of your application. And the deadline had passed. And I was like, oh, y'all, it's too late. It's too late for me. I can't do it, you know. And they're like, and so Woods came into my office. Woods worked at TJJP at the time. And they made me fill it out, even though it was hours after the deadline, but the application was still on the website. And so we got into the Policy Institute and we were like the first trans and non-binary like cohort to like go to their program. And it was like a whole new world for me. Like, I think the first set of workshops, they just had like senators and policymakers. And, you know, I can be a little braggadocious and, you know, I'm a kiki. I can be charming. But in that moment, I just felt like so inadequate to be in that room. Like, I'm like, I was still doing sex work on the side to pay my rent. Like, you know, I'm a tenderloin girl. So it's like rough around the edges. I didn't have the outfits that we needed to have to go into the state capitol. And my, you know, I'm blonde and black and plus size. Like, you gonna see me when I'm coming down the street. There's just all these insecurities that I had that I just felt like I didn't fit into that space. But we started being in the trainings, and this is through the Women's Foundation's Policy Institute. And, you know, there were people on our team like Sasha, this white trans woman who's like a lawyer and has all these degrees, and she can pull like an encyclopedia and pull out these laws and stuff. But where I learned to really shy was in like lobbying, because they all would look to me, the whole team. We would go into the Capitol. They're like, all right, you're going to talk, right? You're going to tell them what our policy is about and da 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 da. And so it was that. That was how I started. And that's where I really shined, was like messaging it to the rest of our communities, messaging it to politicians and their staffers and, you know, all these like bigwigs. Like, that was where I felt like my gift was like thinking about the ideas and then messaging it and campaigning it. And so that's how I got into policy. And it really helped that we were one of the few teams in that institute that during the institute, two laws that we worked on were signed by the governor, which was the Gender Recognition Act, which was led by Sasha, and she had some help from us at Trans Law Center, and the Name and Dignity Act for incarcerated trans people. And so that first law allowed non-binary people to identify as X on their IDs and state-issued documents. And that law has been replicated in other states across the country. And then Name and Dignity Act allowed trans people who are in the custody of the state, who are prisoners, to be able to change their name and gender. And the officers have to call them by their legalized name, because that was something that was not happening, even with legal name changes. And so that's how it started. And then I just kind of got hooked, because you really get to help so much more, you know, working as someone who worked in direct service at St. James and other organizations, like, you know, your impact is one-on-one, like, and sometimes it doesn't even work that way. Like, if you get someone into housing or if you get someone into like a job training program, then like, those are like successes. But if you can help hundreds of people through one big policy effort, like, that was amazing. It was like, oh my God, like, we just helped how many people? Like, that's crazy. So that's how I got into it.
makes me so happy. And I want to pull out a couple things from what you just said here. I mean, one, I think a lot of people can relate to like not feeling adequate or prepared or smart enough or dope enough to make change, right? A lot of people, I think, can relate to that. I know I certainly can. But I can also deeply relate to this piece about finding what your unique contribution is, right? You ain't got to be good at everything. You ain't got to be the PhD holder. You ain't got to be all this. But whatever you're good at, like, do it and do it well and contribute that goodness to making change. I want to hear a little bit from you about the world's first transgender district. Mm-hmm. And I like to keep saying the world's first because, first of all, how the fuck are we in 2021, the Lord's year of 2021, and we are only dealing with the world's first transgender district, but also what a proud accomplishment to have that happen here in the Bay Area, which to me is the center of the known universe. So talk to me a little bit about the process of that. I know your co-founders, Honey Mahogany and Janetta Johnson from TGI, you know, are also in the mix here. So you will be kind of giving us one piece of a bigger story, but we definitely want to hear it. How did this even come to be?
My goodness. Well, I have to say, Alicia, I think we got a lot of inspiration from the ladies, the founders of Black Lives Matter, who definitely were a blueprint for us, as well as I think us being Black trans women, like wanting to secretly replicate something like a Black Wall Street, but for Black trans people. But we didn't know how to do it. Our initial fight was really towards this new wave of development that was coming into the Tenderloin. And I don't think a lot of people realize, you know, the Tenderloin is Central City. It's the most diverse neighborhood in San Francisco. It has the most children, school-age children of any other neighborhood in San Francisco. It has the most families, right? Working class families, you know, low income families living in the neighborhood. And then it also has the densest transgender population in the neighborhood. So we have an estimation of over 600 trans people living and sort of connected to this 6 to 8 block area in the neighborhood. And so when we think about gentrification and how it has happened in West Oakland or Petrillo Hill, Fillmore, all these neighborhoods in San Francisco, there's a way, and the Mission in Soma, there was a way that we were really afraid because all these developers were looking at the Tenderloin as like this last frontier, like this neighborhood that needs, you know, intense cleaning up. And in some ways, maybe they're right. But in other ways, we've seen how so many families and people were displaced from the other neighborhoods. And so we wanted to fight against that. And that's how the effort started. And so we created this coalition and we were organizing. And all we simply wanted was the developer to provide a gift. We couldn't control them buying and developing a property, but we could ask that they actually provide a gift to the trans community, being that we are so present here. And yet we also have just this intense level of disparity. Yeah, that's how it began. And we started our advocacy in 2016. And then in 2017, it became legally recognized. And so to date, it's like we simply, you know, a lot of people, the number one question that I get is like, okay, what is a district? What is a cultural district? You know, it's a legally recognized neighborhood where we are prioritizing the development of trans-owned businesses, of arts and culture and cultural preservation, of housing, and really creating sort of a center very similar to Chinatown or like, you know, every city sort of has like a gayborhood or what have you, where you see these businesses that are thriving and the communities living in those neighborhoods. And that's what we wanted for trans people of color in this neighborhood. And so that's like what we're working to build.
Well, tell me some more about the initiatives that you're moving in this district, because In getting to talk with the mayor last week, mm-hmm. you know, I was hearing about universal basic income for Black trans women. Mm-hmm. And I was hearing about the Dream Keepers, right? Mm-hmm. This Dream Keepers mm-hmm. initiative. And I'm thinking San Francisco is the perfect place to be doing this, but also in a context culturally where trans people are under deep attack from, it's not even a political party thing anymore. It's like, it's an organized movement that basically wants to fucking stay in the dark ages.
Right.
It becomes even more important to have places like San Francisco, like the transgender district, where we can innovate on policy that can improve the lives of trans communities and improve the lives of all of our communities in the midst of all this bullshit-ass chaos. So tell us a little bit about some of the initiatives that you all are moving here.
Yeah, we have mandates as a cultural district that were in agreement with the city when we became legally recognized to focus on certain areas and issues. But, you know, there's no blueprint for a trans district. And so we kind of had to create one. And we wanted to operate, you know, as a cultural district, of course, but our team operate as like a strategy center because we had all this like very short-term funding. So there's this way that instead of being afraid to take risk, we wanted to take all the risk because we're like, okay, well, if this shit fails and like, we'll just move on and work, you know, we'll go work elsewhere or whatever. And so, you know, Mayor Breed announced shelter in place in San Francisco and was one of the first mayors to sort of shut and lock down a city in the United States. And I think 3 or 4 days later, we launched a mutual aid fund. And me and the team had been talking about Mayor Michael Tubbs's efforts in Stockton and how they did like universal basic income versus guaranteed income mm-hmm. and like how they sort of did research in the United States, because most of that work had been done in like developing countries. And, you know, there's all these stigmas like, oh, people are just going to use the money and get high, or people are going to do mm-hmm. this. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, most 99% of the people used it to solve, you know, issues of poverty in their own lives. And so mm-hmm. we had been sort of studying that for a couple years. And then, you know, we talked to the team and we're like, this is the time to do it. We're just going to like the dream was to secretly get a fire truck with a bunch of cash and just drive to the Tenderloin and like,
yeah,
take wind blowers and blow it all out. Right. But we couldn't do that as a nonprofit. We could not do that. And so we just did immediate cash grant assistance. And we ended up helping over 600 trans people across the country with cash grants. And then, you know, we just were advocating, you know, when we were working with other nonprofits and helping them replicate, we helped over 30 organizations across the country replicate this like COVID cash grant, mutual aid sort of stuff. And so then, you know, people started doing it in their own communities. We're like, this is how we did it. This is how y'all can do it. And then we were publicly talking about it in media about this need for this to be ongoing. And so that inspired, you know, Mayor Breed and her team to pursue guaranteed income for trans people in San Francisco. And so now I believe up to 120 trans folks, which is huge for our community. Our community is so very small, but 120 folks will receive up to $1,000 a month.
That's amazing.
Yeah. To cure a lot of the issues around poverty that they're facing. And so like, that's one thing that we did. And then, you know, of course we do like policy advocacy. We're like trying to create programs and then replicate them. So like we've had, our housing concierge program where we, target like sort of new builds, new developments, and we sort of rent them out in bulk through like a holding agreement. And we've reduced the price. We're like, since we're, you know, we're not just like a regular tenant, we are coming in and we're taking 10 of your units. And so now you need to give us like the cheapest rate possible. And then we fundraise to give an additional subsidy so that our folks are only paying a maximum of $700 a month for a studio wow. in San Francisco, wow. which if you know San Francisco, then you know, a
That's
studio.
That's fucking impossible.
Yeah, right. And so we wanted to really target, you know, there's a lot of programs out there for when you are literally homeless and they sort of have you doing supportive case management. And I struggle with those systems as they are because there's a way that we infantilize poor folk. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, you need our support, then we're going to make you jump through a million plus hoops mm-hmm. in order
and
to
show us, right. show us that you deserve this.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I can't stand it. And as someone who's been through those programs, I'm like, poor folks know exactly what they need. We're just never truly given the opportunity, like, to fix them in our ways. And so this program targets folks who are doing sex work or DoorDash or, you know, working in fringe economy where they don't get state disability insurance, they don't get unemployment, they don't, maybe they work in the service industry as like a barista or something. And we wanted them to have affordable studio apartments in the city as trans people and trans people of color. So like that, and then, oh, our entrepreneurship program, it's very simple. We just, if you are an aspiring entrepreneur and you're trans and a person of color, this last year we graduated 8 folks in our boot camp and then we invested in them. We did an 8-week program and then we sponsored their tax filings. We sponsored their like logo design, their websites, all that kind of stuff so that they could launch their dream business. And so we've had folks who wanted to open a cafe and they've since opened a cafe. We've had folks who wanted to do retail and they've launched their e-commerce business or cannabis. And that's probably my favorite program at the Trans District just because I get to work with people in their dreams. And I think, you know, as trans people, there's a way, especially as Black trans women, it's like our dream is to transition and to be seen as for who we are and to just be like sort of under the radar. Like, oh, I have a job, I have housing, and I get to be my most authentic self. But then I notice that sometimes that becomes a dead end. And so we got to work with Black trans women during the pandemic in the heat of it when so many more people were getting on unemployment or, you know, afraid of losing their safety nets. And we, 2 of the Black trans women in the program were like, this is my lifeline. Like, I don't have, you know, I've lost my job and what have you. And I'm going to put everything I can into owning my own business. And so to watch those ladies, like, just like be sponges and like say that they own something. And I think as a Black trans woman, we don't get to say that often, like that I actually own something. And so that's what's been really beautiful about that program.
And just like that, it's time for our weekly roundup of all the things Lady just ain't gonna do this week. Number 1, Kyle Rittenhouse acquitted. So just like Lady said last week, Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted of all charges in the murders of 2 protesters and the injuring of 1. This case was tragic, but it was also predictable. Vigilantes, and more than that, vigilantism, is protected by the criminal legal system as long as you're white. And that's not hyperbole, folks. You can kill another person if you have a reasonable fear that they want to cause you harm. But here's the trick. Reasonable is relative. Is it reasonable for white folks to be afraid of Black people? Yes, because their perception of Black people is as criminals, as dangerous. A Black man running down the street? Dangerous. Must be up to something. A Black teenager walking down the street in a hoodie? Dangerous. Must be up to something. A Black woman banging on the screen door in the middle of the night asking for help? Very dangerous. Must be trying to rob me. Kyle Rittenhouse got away with murder because in Wisconsin, and let me tell you why, because the law supported him doing exactly what he did. That, coupled with a sympathetic arbiter who got to decide which information the jury could and could not consider, all but ensured that the jury would come to the conclusion that Rittenhouse was justified in his fear, and therefore engaged in self-defense. Even though he showed up to a protest with an AR-15 to join other vigilantes alongside the police, illegally crossing state lines with a gun he couldn't even legally have. And something Lady knows we need to keep paying attention to is that we're encouraging private citizens to take matters into their own hands. There were dozens of private citizens with guns alongside police with guns, and their primary goal was to protect property from BLM protesters who were there because a Black man was shot in the back 7 times. Other things Lady just ain't gonna do this week, Malika Shabazz found dead in her apartment in Brooklyn at age 42. Now, Shabazz was one of the youngest daughters of Malcolm X, born several months after his assassination. And she was found dead in her Brooklyn apartment this week, just a few days after the men who were convicted in 1966 of killing Malcolm X were exonerated. Foul play is not suspected, but it's just one in a long string of tragedies that has hovered over and around this family. The assassination of their father in the most horrific way, which some of them were there to witness in that ballroom that night. The death of their mother due to a fire that her grandson set, and then his death years later in Mexico City. I mean, it's a lot. Lady and the whole squad sends our condolences to the family, and we hold them in our prayers. We pray for respite for this family. We pray for healing, and we pray for love to prevail. May we find the people who murdered their father. Okay, here's what we want more of this week, though. Number one, vigilantes being stopped in their tracks from getting away with cold-blooded-ass murder. Now, you will recall that the father and son duo and their neighbor who chased Ahmaud Arbery as he was jogging down the street and ambushed him and then killed him and then claimed self-defense, well, you'll recall that this trio was actually found guilty today of felony murder and a whole other host of charges in Georgia with an all-white jury with the exception of one Black juror. Now, what did they need defending from exactly? A Black man running down the street. No, that's not hyperbole. That's exactly what the father said when he called 911 after killing a man. The operator goes, "What's the emergency?" And he responds, "There's a Black man running down the street." America, goddamn. There are lots of sighs of relief today, especially after earlier in the week when Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted of murder. And after having done this dance quite a few times now over the last decade, I can say honestly, it's okay to feel whatever you feel, as long as you feel something. Now, I guarantee you, someone somewhere will try and tell you that what you feel is wrong, and to that I say, what the fuck ever. The problem is not feeling. It's the numbness, the headiness of it all. Now, before the analysis and the commentary and all that shit, just take a moment to feel. Feel the pain that will never go away from his mother. The pain that surely exists with the families of the men who murdered Ahmaud, that their loved ones are now going to be put in a cage for most likely the rest of their lives. Look how racism and white supremacy tears us apart. Feel all of that. And then, after you've been feeling all that, then decide what you're going to do, how you're going to contribute to building a world that is free of this bullshit. Other things Lady loves this week is a man wrongfully convicted of murder is freed after 43 years behind bars. Now, this story broke Lady's heart, but it also made it swell at the same time. Kevin Strickland was exonerated, finally, for a triple murder he did not commit. And after spending 43 years in jail, his first stop once he was freed from prison was his mother's grave. She died just a few short months ago in August. Now, this man may just have had the unfortunate distinction of being the person who spent the longest time in jail for a crime he didn't commit before being exonerated. Missouri, goddamn. The eyewitness recanted her testimony, and she did hella legwork to get somebody to listen to her that he was not the man who committed the crimes, but very few people would listen. Now, unfortunately, because this man was not exonerated using DNA evidence, he's not eligible for compensation from the state who wrongfully convicted him, and he still now has to build a life. Now, Lady is so glad that he is free. And also, I am so fucking angry at this bullshit setup that turns human beings to stone behind some shit they didn't do. I mean, how do you get 43 years of your life back? Congratulations to you, Brother Kevin. Other things we love this week
is the Charlottesville trials, even though it was a mixed bag. So we had all the vigilante trials ever just pile up in a short amount of time because God's got jokes. But even though the jury couldn't come to any agreement on federal charges, it did find organizers of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville that resulted in the murder of Heather Heyer liable for damages to the tune of more than $25 million for injuries to counter-protesters. Now, who's going to pay this? Well, people like Richard Spencer, disgraced alt-right leader. People like Jason Kessler, organizers of the temper tantrum over the removal of a Confederate statue. Christopher Cantwell, a vocal neo-Nazi podcaster who's already in jail for extortion and threats. And people like James Field, the motherfucker who ran Heather Heyer over in his car, who is serving multiple life sentences for that murder. And his ass was found liable for $12 million in damages, in addition to hundreds of thousands of dollars for medical expenses. Now, fun fact, this strategy of bankrupting racist organizations was first deployed after the first Civil War. And I do say first on purpose, because what the fuck do you think we're in right now? Now, the Department of Justice was first established in the late 1800s to go after the Ku Klux Klan. Now, part of what they would do is sue the shit out of the organization until the organization had no more money to function. That's pretty much what's happening here, too. But if Lady's going to keep it 100, let me tell you, I think the Biden administration would be wise to up the ante a little bit on white supremacists and vigilantes. Now, of course, we've been saying this at the Black Futures Lab and the Black to the Future Action Fund as a part of our Black agenda and our Build Back Bolder mandate for the Biden-Harris administration. But that was back in February, and the stakes are even higher now. Now, of course, there are all kinds of state laws that need to be adjusted and adapted. But the federal government can also make laws and oversight stronger to send clearer guidance to states and municipalities and just motherfuckers in general about what we is gonna do and what we ain't gonna do. So, anywho, lovelies, head on over to the Black to the Future Action Fund and sign on to the mandate. We can make our voices heard that this administration must take a strong stance with respect to racial terror and white supremacist violence. Other things Lady loves this week is dance parties, honey. Now, I had the good fortune of literally stumbling into a lovely dance party this week, and I can say without a doubt that one of the things that Lady loves most is a good dance party. It's that feeling of getting in there while your body starts moving, everybody's putting their best energy in the space, the way your heart starts pounding because you really getting it, and also your favorite song just came on, hey. Looking around to see who gonna get this work tonight. Okay, wait, well, maybe that's just me. But anyways, all I'm saying is shout out to the dance party I stumbled upon this week. Y'all lifted my spirits and helped me remember a thing I absolutely love. Promise you lovelies that an absolutely wonderful dance party is coming your way before I leave. And of course, when I arrive in the ATL. So stay tuned and get them knees ready for all y'all over 40s. Don't leave it all for the youngsters now. Also, sending a special shout out to my god baby, Gael, who turns 4 this week. He loves trains and balls and planets and board games. And he also loves his TT. That's me. People who, like me, have goosebumps, how can they support the work that you're doing?
So in social change, there's always a way that, of course, people can donate. That is probably
come on and
the
drop
easiest.
That link.
Okay, right. TransgenderDistrictSF.com. And you can donate there. We accept inheritances, bank transfers, and all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so my team can support you with that if you just go to our website, transgenderdistrictsf.com.
And how can people follow you on the socials?
Ooh, you can follow Transgender District on all platforms. If you follow my account, I don't know.
Best of luck. Best of luck to you, darling. May the odds ever be in your favor.
But you can follow me, Aria Saeed, and yeah, on all platforms. Femme Queen on Twitter.
So that's it for Lady Don't Take No. But I will be back here every single Friday morning to accompany you, for there's a good chance you might be commuting again. We appreciate you joining us, and let's keep the conversation going. Tell us what's on your mind, tell us what you like, and tell us what you ain't gonna take no more of. On Twitter, we're at Lady Take. On Insta, we're at Lady Don't Take No Pod. We are also on Facebook at Lady Don't Take No Podcast by Alicia Garza. We post ways to do something about things you hear on this show all over our social media. So, if we got you amped up today, check out the socials to find out how you can take action. And, as always, let's give a special shout out to our social media maven, Jahari Farrar, for making sure that people get what they need from our socials. We appreciate you. Please subscribe and write us a review and let the people know what you've heard here today. Our producer is Phil Circus. Our incredible theme is by Latyrix. And this pod is supported by the Black Futures Lab. And me? I'm your host, Alicia Garza. Remember, we love to see it when vigilantes are not allowed to get away with murder. A good dance party can really work wonders. The federal government should do a hell of a lot more to stop white supremacists and vigilantes in their tracks. And happy fourth birthday to my godbaby with the best curls, the sweetest smile, and an adorable love of trains. TT loves you, baby. That's right, I said it, because Lady Don't Take No.
Lady don't take no shit, insist on respect the sister, walk around like a woman. If she won't speak, less of something worse, saying don't play. The girl take herself so serious, like people stare curious, like she got a natural way, her hips sway furious, like, get luxurious.
Love y'all. There is a self, like the